This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Hi, I'm at University College London today and talking to famous jodcaster Dr. Paul Woods. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Melanie.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
So I'm very intrigued when I asked you what you wanted to talk about today. And you told me, oh, I want to talk about the formation of sugar in space. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes. So this is a very simple sugar. It's not really the sugar that we know, you know, in terms of glucose or sucrose table sugar. This is a very simple sugar called glycol aldehyde. And it's pretty much the most simple sugar you can get. And it was detected in space about 10 years ago now. And it was more recently detected about 3 or 4 years ago in a star-forming region. And so my work at the moment is trying to figure out how that sugar was formed in the regions that we find it.
What formed it in terms of like the objects? Is it just the stars?
Yes. In the galactic center, it was detected in a star-forming region, a molecular cloud, sort of a proto-star-forming region. And the other object that we're more interested in is a more well-known star-forming region called G31. And so this is where there are things called hot molecular cores. So these are regions that stars are just starting to form, basically big, dense clumps of matter where the material is infalling, and when it gets to a certain density, we have the fusion of hydrogen, and that's when our star begins its life.
Okay, so how can a star form sugar? I'm baffled by the fact that it can make like complicated molecules.
Yeah, so that's what we're trying to answer. I'm not sure we have any definitive response yet, but we've been looking into the possibilities. So we've known about molecules in space for, I don't know, like 70 or 80 years now. And usually they're very simple molecules. They're 2 or 3 or 4 atoms in size. But this sugar that we're talking about is 8 atoms in size, so it's 2 carbons, 2 oxygens, and 4 hydrogens.
Pretty and big.
Yeah, that's pretty big. And we don't really know how these large complex molecules form. We think it's something to do with the environments that they're in, and it's something to do with the dust grains that are in the interstellar medium. So the dust grains in space give a surface for complex molecules to form on, and then they're released back into the gas phase when they get warm enough. So that's probably why we find them in these star-forming regions, because initially the regions are cold, and so the molecules in the gas phase can freeze out onto the surface of these dust grains. And then as the star starts to form and the material around it starts to warm up, then these ices, we call them, become evaporated from the dust grains in the increasing temperatures. And so we see these molecules in the gas phase. So the idea behind this project was to look into various different ways in this particular sugar forms, and we don't really have a good idea, mainly because this is a relatively new discovery, and the people who do all the difficult chemistry work in the lab haven't really had time and the funding to go and do experiments in the lab to find out how you get these big molecules, or had time to do the really tricky quantum mechanical calculations to find out how you get things like glycol aldehyde. As an astrochemist, we've tried to put together some reactions that we think might be possible, and then we've looked at them all in competition to see which one is most feasible. So we've trawled the literature from the last 10 years or so, and we've collected all the possible formation mechanisms for glycol aldehyde, and then we stick them in a big computer program, really called a chemical model, and this is basically a big collection of chemical reactions that are suitable for the interstellar medium. So they have to work at temperatures less than about 300 Kelvin, so less than about room temperature, down to the temperature of the interstellar medium, which can be as low as 10 Kelvin.
Which is?
Minus 263 degrees centigrade or something. This star-forming region that we're interested in, we wanted to look at whether glycol aldehyde could form at the very, very coldest temperatures, so at 10 Kelvin. And so we put together this network of chemical reactions, something like 6 or 7,000 reactions. And we basically let them run their course, and under the particular physical conditions of the interstellar medium, the density and the temperature, we see basically how much glycolaldehyde we can form and what is the most efficient way of doing it.
Apart from the fact that it's sugar, which, yeah, again, amazed me, why do we care that there's sugar in space?
We care about large molecules in particular because the implication is that they go on to form even larger molecules, more complex molecules, maybe even biologically relevant molecules that we can't see yet. Basically, we're limited on the size of the molecules we see, because the bigger the molecule, generally, the less abundant it is in space. And so when it emits radiation, it's very weak radiation that we can't really detect for the really big molecules. We're interested in things like this because of the links to life, but also because it helps us to understand our universe a bit better as well.
And you talk about detecting those molecules. How do you detect them? Is it a particular wavelength? Is it a particular instrument?
Yes, generally we see molecules in space in the submillimeter regime. So that's wavelengths of a few hundred microns up to maybe 2 or 3 millimeters. We see these with radio telescopes, basically. And these are dotted around all over the world, but we can detect the radiation from specific molecules because we know at what wavelengths these molecules emit. So this particular molecule, glycolaldehyde, was detected in the submillimeter regime, and we saw 3 or 4 lines of this molecule. So it's a fairly safe detection. Really, we need about 3 or 4 lines to make sure we're looking at a specific molecule and we don't get it confused with something else that might emit at similar wavelengths.
Okay. And what is the biggest molecule that has been detected? Like, is it something really complex or is it still something simple? Because you said like the sugar is like 8 atoms or something like that.
Yeah.
So
this is quite interesting, actually, because I think you had an interview on it recently with a guy called Jan Kami. He has detected some molecules called fullerenes, and these are very large carbonaceous molecules. So they're composed of, he detected 2 different kinds, one of which has 60 carbon atoms in a sort of soccer ball type shape, and one of which has 70 carbon atoms. So these are the biggest molecules that have been detected in space at the moment, and they were only detected maybe 2 years ago. But then there's a huge gulf. There's really nothing until you get down to maybe molecules with 12, 13, 14 atoms. So there's a huge range of sort of size of molecules to be filled in. We know a lot about the smaller molecules, 4 or 5 atoms, and we know a reasonable amount about the slightly bigger molecules of, you know, size of sugar or maybe 13 or 14 atoms, but then there's nothing up until these huge fullerenes form, and we don't really know how they form either, so there's a lot of work still to be done, I have to say.
In all those molecules, are they formed only in stars, or is there any other ways that those molecules could form?
Most of the really stable molecules are either formed in stars or in the interstellar medium, so in big clouds of gas and dust. There are some molecules that are only formed in sort of extreme conditions where there are a lot of X-rays or very intense ultraviolet radiation from young stars, perhaps, or from supernovae.
So the measurement of all those big molecules, is it possible only in our galaxy, or can you do it in other galaxies?
So at the moment, I think it's probably only possible in our galaxy. To detect some of these big molecules in other galaxies would be quite challenging, mainly because the emission from these molecules is intrinsically weak anyway. And because these other galaxies are so far away, that just dilutes the radiation that we receive. But I have been doing some other work that has been looking at some nearby galaxies, the Magellanic Clouds. And there we find that In particular for carbonaceous molecules, molecules with a lot of carbon, they're very much more abundant in these Magellanic clouds than they are in our galaxy. So even though it might be difficult to get the oxygen that we need for, say, glycolaldehyde in another galaxy, we can get some very big hydrocarbons in the Magellanic clouds. So.
So do you think that the formation of this molecule might be different depending on the type of galaxy?
I don't think so. In general, I think basically wherever you have a reasonably dense environment and reasonably cool temperatures, you'll get the formation of these molecules. And because these conditions are reasonably ubiquitous in our galaxy, we have to assume that they're the same in other galaxies as well. And so I think in terms of the chemistry in general, I think we can expect to see similar sorts of stuff in other galaxies that we get in our galaxies. I guess the main thing is the difference in metallicity, so the amount of metals that there are to use in our galaxy.
Like metals like iron?
Yeah, metals, when astronomers or when astrochemists talk about metals, they mean anything heavier than helium, really. So hydrogen and then helium and then everything else is a metal, even though, you know, carbon and nitrogen aren't really metals, but we just call them metals. So in other galaxies, you get a different metallicity to our galaxy. That can mean more metals or it can mean a lot less metals. So that can certainly affect the chemistry a lot. So, yeah, we'll see.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Dr. Paul.
Thank you.
And bye.